Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, May 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is on the line to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. He would love to field your calls and questions on patios and decks, but anything is open game. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management and joins us to offer his expertise. Always a popular show when Darren is on. And I think the last time he was here was pre-pandemic shutdown, and he was in the studio. So this will be the first time on the phone. Hang in there, Darren. It'll be fine. 800-348-2551 if you have a question. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls coming up. Good afternoon once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. When we do that topic, we always welcome back Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm. He's a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. Always a great guest on this program. If you have a question about any project you may be doing around the house, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back, sir.
Hello, Ray. Thank you.
It's been a few months now, huh?
It has been.
How are
I thought you forgot about me.
How have things been going?
Things have been going well.
Yeah? Have you been busy?
Been busy. Really, I have not been affected that much by my work and our work because we're a small construction company.
Yeah. So you kept going. You had mentioned to me before the show that decks and patios are a pretty hot topic right about now. What's the biggest mistake do-it-yourselfer would make when working on a patio or putting one in themselves?
Several mistakes, but I would say the biggest mistake would be not constructing the deck safely, particularly an elevated deck.
Yeah.
Across the country, there are a lot of deck accidents over the course of a year. So it's important to build a deck safely. And that's why I thought it would be a good idea to encourage calls about decks and patios on this program, since people may be spending more time at home around a deck or patio than traveling to large-scale events.
Well, it's a good idea. And of course, and in theory, it works perfectly. But, you know, we'll end up with a lot of calls about plumbing because we always do. But, you know, when you're making a deck, what's the key safety factor that we don't understand?
Well, a deck needs to be designed for dead load and live load. That's engineering terminology. Dead load being the weight of the people that are going to be on the deck, and that is 40 pounds per square foot. Mm. And that's the same load as a typical room in a house.
Right.
And, that's a live load. And then the dead load is the weight of the lumber itself,
yeah,
the framing members, and that's between 10 and 15 pounds. So that's a good starting point. You can size your dimensional lumber properly. And then another key point is attaching the deck to a house, typically at a ledger. And those ledgers are notorious for failing. And kind of like a snowstorm, you design a system for a once-in-a-100-year snowstorm. You design a deck for once-in-a-long-time load, whether it's a graduation party or something like that.
Yeah.
You need to design it for a worst-case scenario.
Right.
And all the fun stops when an accident happens. So,
well,
design it with safety in mind.
And we've seen, of course, many accidents happen. We always see them in the news, or at least once a year you'll see too many people were out on their deck and went down. So this is no joking matter. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. And we'll take a call or two here before the first break, Darren, and then we'll take a break, check the email, and get back to the phones. This one is Dave in Albany. Dave, you're first.
Hey, Darren, how you doing? Do you know anything about concrete?
Unfortunately, maybe a little bit too much. Go ahead.
Okay.
As in, I've worked with it a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just picture my house. I just built a brand new house, and the front porch, the whole base is concrete, the whole floor. And it comes out 8 feet, and then it wraps around to 12 feet. So the contractor did that, blah, blah, blah. Well, anyway, there's cracks every 6 feet or so. Some are spider, and then one you can put a dime in it. So is that a concern? Should I be worried about this? I had another guy come out and he said he should have put a stress cut or something.
A control joint to control the crack.
A control joint?
Right.
Yeah.
Dave, I missed where this slab is located. Is this exterior or patio type slab or is it inside?
Yeah.
The basement?
No, it's an outside patio, covered porch. It's a wraparound concrete porch.
Okay. All right. That's we mentioned it, a segue just briefly to an alternative to decks are patios, concrete slabs, where they're built basically on grade and don't need to be elevated. They're a cost-effective alternative to decks, maybe costing about half the price. Now, getting back to your question about the concrete, concrete shrinks. That's one given about concrete. It will shrink. So typically you provide crack control joints, and that's how frequently you provide those control joints is a function of the depth of the concrete, whether it's 4 inches thick or 6 inches thick. Typically, a larger rectangular or square slab, you'd want 10 feet by 10 feet control joints for a 4-inch thick slab. So if you didn't have those control joints and the pour is longer than 10 feet, you're liable to pick up a shrinkage crack. And another reason for cracking is the subgrade not being compacted properly. And also, reinforcing steel mesh is typically added to help control the concrete cracking. An alternative to that are microfibers. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I would, what you could do with that crack is keep an eye on it. And the crack that's larger, the dime size, you could grind that out with a 4-inch grinder, make it relatively neat looking, and then insert a backer rod and then a caulk, either a urethane caulk or a silicone caulk to help keep that joint clean. So water doesn't get in there, even though if it's roof covered, you could have blown water getting in there. And in the wintertime, that water would freeze and tend to expand and make that crack worse.
All right, Dave,
so that's it.
Go ahead, Darren.
Go ahead.
No, you finish it up, and then we'll take a break.
I think I'm done, unless Dave has another question or comment.
We are now ready to take that break. Dave is gone. It's 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is here. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement. More calls, more email, and such coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's home improvement, maintenance, repair today. Darren Tracy is our guest, joins us over the telephone, and the number for you to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpopwamc.org. This email came in, Darren, from Paul in Hudson, and Paul writes, I have a 109-year-old Craftsman home build on a central block cement block foundation, which runs a French drain that runs around the inside edge and drains to a sump, joining the sewer line at the front of the house. The floor, however, is dirt or perhaps sand dust, which is currently covered in rubber mats. The basement ceiling is about 7 feet, but because of duct work and pipes, there are spots where the head clearance is just 6 feet. The question is, can the floor be excavated down in order to create more headroom in the basement? Obviously a huge project, perhaps not affordable, but I'm wondering if it's possible and what's involved.
I would say it's possible to the depth of the bottom of your footing. Deeper than that, and you'd have to bench or slope the grade back adjacent to the footing so that you do not undermine the footing. Mm-hmm. 7 feet, I think you could really help out the environment of the house. And I mentioned this on the home improvement show before on older homes, really help out the environment if you added some concrete or concrete pavers over top of the dirt floor in the basement. And before you install the pavers, the concrete, you apply 6 mil vapor barrier. That will really help keep the humidity down in the summertime. And I think that's a project worthwhile. If you use pavers, they're 2-inch thick pavers. That's not taking away that much of your headroom. So I would investigate that.
Still, I mean, with some of the ductwork, 5 feet or 6 feet, it's a lot of kind of ducking your head. I mean, as far
Well, it is. It is. And you're taking away a few inches, so it's a trade-off. Like a lot of things in life, it's a trade-off.
But is it an enormous job to excavate down and then put the mill and the...
It is. I mean, I have not done... Well, I guess I have done that. I've done that in a crawl space. Excavated a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a big project. But again, you wouldn't want to excavate any lower than the bottom of your footing without benching or sloping the soil next to the footing. You don't want to undermine your footing. Let me mention right now, Ray, if anybody wants to talk about a problem that they have or a project that they have, they can reach out to me after the show, and they can reach me at Darren@WestBranchInc.com, or they can look on Facebook, West Branch Engineering, or my website, Google search, West Branch Engineering.
All right, sir. Well, thank you. This email came in from John, and John writes, any suggestions for a patio that will be over the septic tank? We're in New York and pump the tank every 7 years.
Yes, you definitely wouldn't want the patio over top of your leach field. It's probably okay over top of your septic tank as long as you provide access to your septic tank. On all the septic systems I design now, I include a hatch that extends to grade for easy access for pumping. So you could install that hatch and then pour your concrete around that.
Okay. All right, fair enough.
Ray?
Yeah.
Ray, I just wanted to say that occasionally I like to make eye contact with you during these conversations, and I'm missing that. So I just sketched out a little pencil figure here on a piece of paper. So when I'm,
well, thank you. That's disturbing. I appreciate you mentioning that. That's great.
It's pretty good looking, too. You're playing the guitar.
Oh, really?
To go along with that really good music that you play during the intermissions.
I'm not sure how to react, but still, I mean, we're doing a show, so it's going to work out anyway. You know what? I'll keep my eyes closed for the rest of the show. That'll be the trade-off. Let's see here. My mind tells me we'll go to Nicole in Nassau. Nicole, you're on.
Yes, hi.
Hello.
Gentlemen, I have an in-ground pool that was surrounded by concrete, and it could be 20, 25 years old at this point, but a lot of the concrete slabs have sunk, and all the weeds have moved in. And I'm just wondering, is it possible to put a wooden deck over the concrete to make it look better?
I think it is. I think it is. I'm just thinking about code requirements as I'm answering the question, but I don't know where that would be a problem as long as you have proper egress from the pool in terms of steps and railing leading up out of the pool. I'm not a pool expert, but I don't know where that would be a problem, to tell you the truth. It might be a good, relatively inexpensive solution.
Well, that's what I was thinking. What happens, though, because the deck is going to be higher now. So where the what I haven't figured out is where the edge of the pool would now meet the deck.
Right, that's what I referred to, Nicole, in that you would have to maintain proper egress steps to get out of the pool to take into account your increased elevation. So you'd have to make a step, code compliant step.
Makes sense, Nicole?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. Darren Tracy is our guest, and Bill is in the Hudson Valley. Hello, Bill.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
So I live in a old-style Cape home, and there's a breezeway between the garage and the house. And it's on a slope, so the back of the breezeway – underneath is a storage space. Essentially, it's a deck. And the ledger or the main beam for the backside of the breezeway is three 2x8s that don't have any posts or footings. They just sit in the block foundation of the garage and the house on either side. It's about a 15-foot span. I was thinking about extending the deck, going back from that breezeway or building onto that breezeway, having a deck extension. Would I be able to use that main header as a ledger board, in essence, and just attach the new deck onto that?
Yeah, I'm not following. I'm not picturing the description of your deck exactly. Is the beam sitting on top of your block foundation by gravity, or is it attached with anchor bolts of some sort?
It's not attached by anchor bolts. When they built the home, they basically built it's like the cement block foundation, and there's just a punch out where the main beam for the breezeway enters into both sides of the block foundation. So there's just essentially like a cutout in the block.
Okay. All right, so I'm picturing that. So repeat, please, the question. I mean, that beam functionally could be fine. I mean, it has to be sized accordingly. It has to be protected from the weather. Should be pressure treated. If it's not pressure treated, there should be some poly between the masonry and the wood. If it's covered with a roof, if it's not, it needs to be pressure treated.
It is covered with a roof, and I believe it's pressure treated. My main question was, that main beam that's, essentially acting as like a header for the existing breezeway, if I wanted to add on to that and build the deck out, could I use that main beam as a ledger board in essence and just put the new deck joists directly into that beam?
Okay. If the beam was robust enough to carry the additional load, yes. You could use joist hangers or put the new joists on top. But yes, but you need to calculate the load. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, calculate the load with 40 pounds per square foot live load and about 12 to 15 pounds per square foot dead load. And there are prescriptive methods to size beams online, and some of the hardware manufacturers have software programs. But that sounds like you might want to consult somebody that's familiar with sizing.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot.
Can be done, Bill.
800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today, and John is in Cobleskill. John, you're on.
Hi, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. I have a gazebo that's in a six-sided gazebo that's in good shape, but the base is rotted. And my original thought was to possibly cut the base away from the gazebo itself and then try to jack up the gazebo to pull the base out and then have a new base built and then reattach it. And I wondered if you could, if you thought that was a good idea at all. And then secondly, any suggestions for jacking up something like that? It's about, I'm going to say it's about 12 feet across.
Okay. I don't think that's a bad idea, John. Let me just back up a second. I had a thought about the woman who called in about the pool. Let me respond to that, and I'll get right back to you. John, one negative of installing deck boards over top of concrete for a pool would be slivers, and they also would get the deck boards would tend to be hot on your feet, whereas the concrete wouldn't.
All right.
That was just on my mind. So back to you, John. Yeah, on that gazebo, yeah, I think it's feasible to do that. What you would want to make sure is that the gazebo is stable when you're decking that, so you would want to install a horizontal joist or brace from each column around the perimeter, and maybe double those up, one on the inside and one on the outside. And you could also use those from which to jack. You could probably get away with just two jacks. You'd want to set yourself up on one side, jack it up a few inches, and jack the opposing side. You might have to go to three or four sides to keep it even. And don't go up any more on one side than 2 or 3 inches at a time to keep your load fairly level. But I think it's feasible to do that, and probably not a big job.
John, thanks a lot. 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today on the program. And let's see. Ronnie's in Saugerties. Hi, Ronnie.
Hi.
You're on.
Oh, thank you. What I wanted to find out is if I could take a deck that I have that's off a mudroom and expand and enclose it.
And make it, what, a three-season type room?
No, I could enclose it with a screen, but just to have more of a place where I could come in and take off my outdoor clothes, my outdoor shoes, so that when I come into the house, I'm not bringing any viruses or microorganisms into the house. And also to have a place for my pets to sort of wander out a little bit without wandering away.
So like an airlock in a space station.
I don't know that term.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, well, that's in that spaceship X is launching at 4:30 today or
right,
something
you
like
are.
That. Right.
Good man,
right.
Good man.
Do you have a roof on that deck right now?
No, it's just an open deck, open to the air.
And you were thinking about installing a roof?
Yeah, a roof and sides.
Yeah, okay. Because you're installing a roof, that's going to add more snow load to the structure. So you'd have to have somebody take a look at that to make sure that your existing structural members and foundations are adequate to handle that snow load that would occur. Yeah.
And, that's a very smart point. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. You bet. And let me mention one thing, Ray. People have asked me about this a lot.
Yeah.
About attaching a deck to a house. If you attach a deck to a house at that critical juncture called the ledger, you need to protect the other side of the deck from frost, the foundations, the sonotubes, the posts.
Yeah.
You need to protect those from frost, and that's typically excavating down 4 feet. And there are alternative methods of doing that by adding insulation to protect the soil and adding certain types of soil that drain well.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to mention that. But there is an alternative. You do not have to connect a deck to your house. You can have it adjacent to your house, maybe a half-inch gap. And the code states that if you do not connect the deck to your home, you do not need to install your foundations below frost level. In other words, you could float them, which makes for a much less expensive deck construction.
Yes.
So I just wanted to throw that out there.
All right. Thank you, Darren. Tracy is our guest. And let's grab one more call before the next break. Larry in Nassau. Larry, you're on.
Hey, my question is about air in pipes.
Oh, yeah.
It seems to be intermittent. Some days you can turn the water faucet on, you can flush the toilet, and it's fine. And then some days you can flush the toilet and you get this noise like you've never heard before. And the same thing with the faucets. How do you test for that?
I'm not sure what you would be testing for, and I don't know why it would be intermittent.
Had a leak.
Say it again, Larry.
That's what I thought. I mean, why is it intermittent? I either have a leak or I don't. And if I had a leak in the pipes, wouldn't I see water somewhere?
Yeah, a couple of guesses about why that might be intermittent, and that would be the air building up over time, and then it gets to a point where there's a large enough bubble that it moves along in your piping system. So it builds up over time and then moves. So that might be one plausible explanation.
Mm. Interesting.
But it seems to me...
Speaking of testing...
Hang on. Go ahead, Darren.
Depending upon this is a municipal or a residential system, it sounds like it's a residential system. You have your own well. Is that
yeah,
correct,
it is.
Larry? Yeah, you might be sucking
the
air in some place along.
Say it again, Darren. You might be doing what?
Sucking air into the system. If it's a shallow well, when the pump is typically inside the basement and it creates a vacuum and pulls the water up from the well outside into the house, and sometimes the piping cannot be 100% secure and you'll be sucking air as well as the water, introducing air into the system with a shallow well.
Now, could that make it intermittent based on the water level in the well?
It could. Like I said, it could build up in a certain area until it got to be a certain size and then move along.
Go ahead, Larry.
My well is 500 feet deep.
Okay, then that would not be a shallow well. That's a submersible pump.
Go ahead, Larry.
If I had a leak anywhere, wouldn't it be in that well shaft before it even hits the water?
Right, and since that's a drilled well with a submersible pump, you're not going to introduce air into the system like I just described with a centrifugal shallow well. It's two different types of systems. And I'd be surprised if you introducing air into the piping anywhere, because that piping is all under pressure. But you might have some air that's locked into the wall, and it comes out of the water, much like when you open up a carbonated soda.
Mm.
You release the pressure, the air bubbles start to come out. That might be part of the problem.
Oh, interesting. Well, Larry, we have to take a break here, but I'm so glad we at least got one plumbing call in here, Darren. I feel like things are back to normal now. It's the new normal. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Yeah, we got a plumbing show here. Darren Tracy is joining us. I'm getting signals from the engineer. What's going on there, Zach? Oh, I see. Oh, he had to play the underwriting. Okay, so I'll sing you a song now. You ready? Okay, I'll sing you a song. I get a kick out of you. La-da-cha-da-cha. I get no... All right, go ahead. Take it. You know, I'm just discovering that hearing John Scofield on guitar, McCoy Tyner on piano, a little better than my singing. It's hard to believe. But welcome back to Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. And this email came in from Josh. Josh writes, I have a garage. Oh, congratulations. I have a garage attached to the basement. Above the garage is the family room, which during the winter is the coldest room in the house, due in large part, I believe, to the poor insulation job in the unfinished and unheated garage ceiling. The insulation between the joists is fiberglass batting without craft paper, held in place by chicken wire stapled to the timber joists. It is sagging, sheds into the garage space, looks awful, has hosted rodent nests over the years. Well, it sounds like house beautiful. What type of material and technique would you suggest to try and better insulate the family room from the unheated garage? Could I reuse the batting by tightly affixing plastic sheeting over each joist bay? It's a long letter from Josh in Austerlitz. Do you get the point, Darren?
I do. He's got a garage and then a living space over top of the
right.
garage.
Right. It's cold. Unheated. Yep.
And the insulation from the ceiling is falling down. So you would not want to reinstall the insulation and then hold it in place by plastic, because that's putting the would be a vapor barrier.
Yeah.
That's putting a vapor barrier on the cold side of the assembly, and that's a no-no in this winter climate because you can get condensation. So that's something you would not want to do. You could take out the existing insulation, and then you could install the vapor barrier on the underside of your floor sheathing, or just leave the vapor barrier out. Maybe use a house wrap, a Tyvek, to minimize the air movement. You really lose a lot of BTUs with air movement, not just the R value.
Yeah,
the blanket effect. And then you could re-insulate that with an insulation that fits really tight. That's a product called Roxul, R-O-X-U-L. It's mm-hmm. a mineral wool. It's also a fireproofing type insulation.
Yeah.
That works well. And another option, and this would be a candidate for a spray foam system, where you remove that insulation and spray the underside. That would help seal the assembly of wall as well.
Okay.
For air infiltration.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Well, that's a good start. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. Mary in Mayfield. Hello, Mary in Mayfield. Goodbye. The way things are going, I'm going to leave now. Mary, are you there? Oh, for Pete's sake, Zach the engineer, you had nothing to do with this, but I'm still irritated. Tom in Feuerbusch. Now I'm number one again. Tom in Feuerbusch. Tom, you're on.
Hi. A question about using larch on a deck. I'm not real keen on using a plastic material. Of course, the deck gets a lot of exposure, and I heard larch is good for being weather resistant. Pros and cons?
I've not heard of larch being used much for decking material. Another name for larch is a type of tree species for those that are not familiar with that. It goes by another name called tamarack, and it's an interesting conifer in that it loses its needles in the winter, unlike pine or spruce that retain the green needles all year long. So that's larch. As I recall from my college days, that it's a fairly strong species, and I don't think it's as resistant to decay as cedar. So I can't answer your question about whether it's a good resource or not, or a product or not, without researching that a little bit.
Okay.
Because it's a really uncommon product to use. But I appreciate it if you maybe send me an email, and I will research that because I'm curious at this point.
Okay. And what is that email address?
It's Darren@westbranchinc.com.
Okay.
Some of the typical deck boards that are used are Southern yellow pine, pressure treated Southern yellow pine. That's the most common, and that's least expensive. Call that a cost factor of one. And then you might jump up to a cedar decking, which is rot resistant, and that might be a cost factor of 1.5 to 2 from the Southern yellow pine. And then from there, you could use manufactured wood assemblies such as Trex, and that jumps up to maybe a cost factor of 3 or 4 in terms of price of the decking. So,
Tom, you want to follow up?
This larch that I've talked about is from the Tappan Zee Bridge. It was underwater for 60 plus years, I guess.
Wow.
Does that mean anything as far as its its age. It's not new growth.
Huh. It means that it could be still not a rot resistant wood, but not rot when it's underwater because it doesn't have enough oxygen in the right environment to decay.
Hmm.
You can, a lot of logs that are not naturally rot resistant can be preserved under the water for a long time. I mean, some people even harvest logs. They specialize in harvest sunken logs, and they're protected from decay because of the lack of oxygen.
So, Tom, how did you were you dredging for dead mobsters? How did you get these?
Just happened to come upon it.
Interesting.
A lumber mill.
That's cool, man. Well, so, listen, that's a really good one. What I suggest is dropping Darren an email, and that'll be his homework for the next show.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, man. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Oh, Mandy in East Greenbush, you're on.
Oops. Hi. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Me.
That's all right.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a driveway that goes into my garage, and there's a little extension to the driveway to the right of the garage that goes into a side door. And when previous owners had resurfaced the driveway, so now the driveway is actually like the same level as the door that goes into the house, to the point where, like in the winter, if the driveway expanding at all, I have a hard time opening that door. And I want to replace those doors, but I don't know if I should try to somehow lower the level of the driveway, like in front of that door, or what I should do for that.
Yeah, that's a tough one. You might have to regrade that. I'd really have to take a look at it and see how much pitch there is, but yeah.
Virtually none. It's almost flat. The door and the threshold for the door is pretty much at the same level as the driveway. So
yeah. Well, you've either got to raise the door or lower the driveway.
Okay.
You're creating a trip hazard by raising the door threshold. It'll be above your finished floor. So.
Yeah. So, well, I've used a jackhammer before, so I can go rent one of those and have at it some weekend.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Well, good luck with that one, Mandy. Thanks a lot for the call. And let's see. We go over to Francis in East Greenbush. Francis.
Hi. My son just bought a brick house in Troy. It's a typical brick house, mid-1800s. In the back is an enclosed porch, and it's leaking. And they have found termites. I mean, just recently bought. But anyway, the roof is made out of particle board, and it's got asphalt shingles with nails that are come right through that you can see on the, you know, when you're standing inside the porch, you can see the roofing nails through it. I don't think that the angle of the roof is deep enough. I guess that's one of my questions. What is the optimal angle for a snow load? This is about, I'd say, 20 by 12 feet. There's metal flashing, and fiberglass fabric has been used, and it's coated with tar, but it's still leaking. And I'm wondering if this thing, if the roof should just be removed. Or can this, like, it's like the size of a hand, maybe 6 inches by six inches.
Okay.
This rotten area that has termites, can that be repaired?
There's a lot there. Yes, it can be repaired. It sounds like you do need a roof replacement. And pitching the roof, you could use asphalt shingles. That's probably the least expensive roofing material. And I think that they're warranted, believe it or not, down to a pitch, low pitch of 2 and 12. That's 2 inches of rise and 12 inches of run. But 3 and 12 and 4 and 12 are much more advised as a minimum.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And they may be carpenter ants instead of termites, too. Termites are bad news.
Yeah.
Termites are bad news. You really should have that looked at because they can travel and do more destruction than carpenter ants.
Okay.
Yep.
Yes. Okay. Now the roof is attached to the side of the house, which is made out of brick. So at least the house itself is brick, but you still think that the termites could move from there?
Well, yes, because your floor joists probably would. And, you know, they could get into the floor joists also. There may be the wood framing behind the brick facade.
Right.
But, yeah, you really should have that looked at by a professional. Termites, as I said, are bad news, can be bad news.
All right, Francis, thank you so much for the call. Now we jump over to Middletown, and Austin, you're on.
Excuse me.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Sure thing. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I got a quick question for you. I have a basement that's finished. It's poured concrete. And the floor is concrete as well, but it's 2x4s with sheetrock on top. I'm not sure there's a vapor barrier behind the sheetrock, but I'm getting a lot of problems with humidity and mold. Basement's always cool. I mean, there's baseboard heating, but other than I don't want to tear down the sheetrock, and I don't know if there's anything I could put on the flooring to help with that problem, or I don't want to run a dehumidifier constantly either. You know, so I don't know if there's any products out there that might help that situation.
I think even though you may not want to run a dehumidifier, that may be your least expensive solution. Basements can be difficult in terms of installing a vapor barrier. As I mentioned earlier, you don't want to put a vapor barrier on the cold side of a wall, or in that case it was a ceiling. But in the basement it's a little bit different because your cold and warm switch from summer to winter in a different way. So
a concrete wall with a 2x4 and then the sheetrock over it.
Hmm. Okay.
But you don't know if there's a vapor barrier behind it.
I don't believe so. I don't think there was.
You don't believe so. Yeah, I mean, short of waterproofing the exterior of the basement walls, they wick in a lot of moisture. If you didn't have a vapor barrier below the slab, that wicks in a tremendous amount of moisture. Most of those problems are solved before construction.
Hmm.
And it's usually the wall. It's not coming from the floor, right? You floor covering, like carpeting or something?
You know, that could help. That could help, yeah. You could actually put a layer of vapor barrier on top of the concrete, possibly, to keep the moisture from wicking up. It would need to be a good seal. Could create some problems if you do have a vapor barrier underneath the existing concrete. It's somewhat complicated.
Yeah.
All right.
You have to do some investigation to come up with a solution.
Well, Austin, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. We jump over to Poston Kill, New York. And Jacob, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a plumbing question for you.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got a residential well and also a Culligan water purification system, but the water pressure in the house is just really weak. So I'm wondering, first, with a well, is it something that I can do to increase the water pressure? And if so, do I go to Culligan, or do I go to, like, a company that specializes in wells?
You'd go to a company that specializes in wells or a plumber. Your pressure is regulated by a pressure switch, and it has a low set point and a high set point. Typically, they are 30 pounds, 50 pounds, where the pump comes on at 30 and kicks off at 50. And sometimes they're 460, so if you want to check what your setting is, and if it's at 30, 50, you could change that out relatively easily to a 40, 60 and pick up additional pressure that way. That would be the first thing to look at.
Okay, I'll definitely do that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We have about a minute left here, and you know what? Let's get another pipe question. Kevin in Castleton, Vermont. Kevin, you're on.
Hello, how are you guys?
Good. You have about a minute here.
Hey, Kevin.
Okay, well, I just might have some insight on the guy with some air in his lines.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I tuned in right in the middle of it. He's got a deep drilled well. He could have a leaky check valve on his deep well pump.
Oh.
And he could, if he's got a bladder tank, he could have a small pinhole in the bladder of his pressure tank, also letting little bubbles of air into his pipes.
Well, we're about out of time here, Kevin, but Darren, what do you think?
Thank you.
That's another plausible explanation where he has a leak on his bladder. Leaky check valve, that's not a plausible explanation because that's going to be totally encased around water, so he's not going to get air in there. And if you take 15 seconds to say the larch is moderately resistant to decay. I looked that up.
Oh, you did.
I don't have a homework assignment. It's too nice weather to add homework. So.
All right, man. Well, try to stay busy, stay healthy, and maybe next time you're on the show, we'll have you here in the studio. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Support comes from Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany hard cider made from local apples, pizza, light fare, and cider for pickup and delivery 7 days a week, 518-449-9999 for delivery, ninepincider.com. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years, qfcc.com. Once again, thanks to Darren Tracy for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling already. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Charlene Knight, who has been on the phones so many times now and really doing a moderately competent job. Well done. Thank you very much. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on the show, it's gardening. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward will join us. Stand by now for 51%.